Dude, let's talk about that Summer League game last night. I know it's just Summer League, but we got to see some big minutes from Chet, Jang, Butler, and Keontae Johnson. So, what'd you like about Chet's game?
Oh, man. First of all, his defense is spot on. I'm really excited about what he's been able to do on defense right now. Obviously, the offensive game, throwing what he did up there is really, really nice. But the reality is that I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at this, the future of what Chet can do. And the fact is, let's just be honest, we're not going to expect him to go out there and put up 25 points every single game. But man, that was nice to see, dude. It was really nice to see.
Yeah, 25 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 5 blocks. 15 shots, 9 of 15, baby.
5 blocks, man. I can't. That's just amazing, man. I mean, I know we're talking Summer League, G League, whatever you guys want to say, but anytime that we're able to see some of the blocks that he's able to put up there, they're impressive. They're going to be across the board. It's just not G League. It's just not Summer League that he's going to be blocking these shots. It's all NBA. They all know it. When I say they all, I'm saying the rest of the NBA, they know it. They know that he's there to play. You can look at the players that are coming down the lane trying to stuff it in Chet's face, and they're doing this on purpose because they wanted to try to get a dunk on him. But it's been really impressive how Chet has stood there and taken a lot of physical contact coming down the lane, straight up. He's been able to not foul. Highly intelligent going about the way he's going about.
Yeah, dude. Chet gave us a lot to look forward to. I personally think there's a chance he might get shut down. The only thing I'd say, like, and I'm not comparing him to any other players or anything, but Chet loves to play. He's a gamer, and he takes on every challenge, and he's not going to just shy about it and run back to San Antonio or something like that, like somebody else. Like, I get why some people
run out of San Antonio.
I get why some people would rather duck and avoid actual conflict, but Chet has never backed down from a challenge, and that maybe is a bit of a flaw. Last year we saw him get hurt in a pro-am. Court was fucked up. He shouldn't have been playing. LeBron, the strongest, fastest player in the world, like, really takes it out of him. And so we end up seeing him miss the season because of that. But why? Because Chet never backs down from a challenge. He's definitely not going to run away.
Yeah, man, he's not. I mean, he's just, I look at it and I have to say is like, during the draft process, I started recognizing that there was a different aspect to Chet than we all understood. We looked at Chet and the way that he was being, targeted as the number one pick in the NBA draft, right? For a very long time. Since he was 16, everybody talked about him being the number one pick. He didn't want to go to Orlando, and he made it super clear. Why would he not want to go to Orlando? It was because Orlando is still a couple years away from being even a contender. So why would he push his way to a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder? It's because he recognized game. Game recognizes game. And he recognized that he was never going to be able to be the player that he was going to be unless it was for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm looking at some of these guys that we're picking up, and people are like, oh, no, you shouldn't have done with Case, and that was a mistake. Listen, it's not about necessarily right now. It's about when Chet has to sign his Supermax contract and we have to have really big contracts for these other players. Like, we're going to have to pay a lot of people a lot of money. So in the aspect of all this stuff that we're talking about with Chet and Shea and all these guys, it's about team, man. If you can build a team, you can build a community of guys that want to play together for a very long time. They'll do whatever it takes to stay together. Whatever it takes. Yes, sometimes that means that, Shea or somebody else will end up having to take a $3 or $4 million pay hit or whatever. Guess what? Big deal. I look at this as a way that players like Oklahoma City or a young team that says, hey, listen, we have a bunch of young players. We want to get paid. How do we do this? Well, there's one thing they can do, and it's play the midseason tournament. $500,000 a player. $500,000 a player is the reward. These are the things that matter. If Oklahoma City finds a way to start counting in and getting people to start accumulating more money by staying there and not doing anything, of course it's going to be people are like, hey, you know what? Let's go look over here. Let's go look over here. Like playoffs, you get more money, right? If Oklahoma City is drafting players, trading players out that aren't making them fit, right? Which is not that big of a deal. You're not making the fit. We'll package you with a couple of these other players that aren't making the fit, and we'll move up in the draft, right? We'll go 3 or 4 spots up. We'll go over here. We'll get some more draft picks for 2032 or whatever. But what do we want to say about this team that it already hasn't been said? You know, one of the reasons that if you look at our comments about Victor is the last few episodes that we've talked about Victor is we are just repeating what San Antonio fans said about Chet. We're just repeating that. And they get all upset and they're, panties in a wad. And I get it, right? We all got upset about the same things that they were saying about Chet when we drafted him, when Chet got injured and all that stuff. But the reality of what we're sitting in is that this team is designed to dominate teams that think they can play and win a playoff round with one player.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what's happening here. They're not excited. We, as Oklahoma City Thunder fans, are excited about the entire team, 15 players. Like, we're all sitting here like, how are we going to fit on these 15 players? You got 21. How are we going to do this? You know? Guess what? Spurs fans are excited about one player. You know, they should be right now. Victor's a very good player. He's got a lot of issues, but so does everybody else, man. You know, this is not a surprise. Like, if you and I wanted to sit here and say all the good things about Victor that we've seen and we scouted out the last few, you know, months and a year, right? Nothing would be original. Nothing.
Yeah.
Not a single word coming out of our mouth would be original if we want to give Victor praises. So what do we have to do?
I mean,
flip the script, bro.
Speak the truth. That's what kind of trips me out is there, like, we're not the only ones talking about it. And honestly, he's the one who brought all this attention on himself by not, like, dealing with the Britney Spears situation properly. Like,
you can't call him soft. Have one of your people hit somebody that's a female in America and think it's going okay. I mean, I understand that there's some people from the South that thinks it's okay, that, well, she deserved it because she got her nose in it. But I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In no way, shape, or form do I want that to be okay.
Yeah, it's not okay. And
they knew it was a female and they acted like that. It wasn't like a guy was over there trying to hump Victor at all. It was like Britney Spears tapping him on the shoulder. They knew it was a female and they acted that way. That's the thing that's concerning to me.
Yeah, and like, so what? TMZ's talking about it. Like, every news station is talking about it. You know, everybody's talking about how soft Victor looks, right? And but we say something.
Let's just be honest though. Let's talk about the future face of French hoops, man.
Because
as much as we want to talk about Victor and all this other stuff, I want to talk about who I believe is going to be the future face of French hoops. And that's Usman Jang.
Right.
Usman Jang is a special athlete that 90% of the NBA fans don't even know who is. And I'm okay with that. And I'm okay that nobody really knows who he is right now, because the reality of what he can do and who he's what he is capable of doing is truly spectacular at his size. He's 6'10". He's got really long arms. I think they're like 6'11". He's got that skinny frame, but his shot, the way he gets to the hole, his rebounding ability, like, it's truly on point. I think he had 9 rebounds last night, 22 points. Like, he had a really nice, solid game. And I keep watching him dominate this competition like this. And I'm like, you know what? I think there's a place for him on that 10-man rotation. I mean, it's crazy to say that we have to really think hard about our 10-man rotation, but our 15-man rotation is going to be hard enough. And when people are like, you guys don't have 15 guys to play and rotate. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And you got to look at the squad that we have. Like, you can go 10 deep without even blinking. All right. So it's not very hard to find the rest of the 5 guys that are pretty good ballers on that team that's finding their way to the top 10. Because that's the only way that you're going to get playing time in this Oklahoma City Thunder, and a lot of playing time, is by somehow sneaking into the top 10 players. Like, top 15, you're still going to get your 10, 15 minutes a game, but it's not going to be consistent. And that's what top 10 has to do for you, man. It's the top 10 that's going to give you consistent minutes. And I'm telling you, we're going to have 18 guys on the bench ready to go at every single game. We got 3 two-way players that can play for 50-something games. You know, I fully expect to see 2 of those guys almost on the bench at almost every single game.
Dude, Usman Jang, 22 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 1 steal. 11 dude, shots.
Insane, man.
And that's...
See, I want to say this. I said last podcast, I said that Victor couldn't make an assist for his life, all right? This is what this is, I'm saying, okay? I want to say this, is that Usman Jang finds the open man.
Can you take him out?
In places that make that open man most successful. And most of it is throwing an alley-oop, is a layup, you know, is, you know, getting underneath the rim like he does and then passing it to a three-point wide-open shot. Like, his knowledge of the game and how to, you know, get the defense to focus on him for a split second and get the other guys open is elite. And when you see a player like that that's able to get the defense to second think about what's going on, that's how you know that that player understands the game in a way. And I get it. People won't necessarily understand what we're saying about the comparisons to this or that player. But when you look at Usman Jang, you see a player that truly understands the game, and he's only just turned 20 years old. So you know he's, or maybe 19, but you know he's going to be in the league for a long time. And he's got a long time before we expect him to get serious minutes every single game.
Yeah. And like, you know, we saw him in Salt Lake City take over the, you know, a lot more of the primary playmaking role. And I thought he looked really good, but there was a lot of turnovers that came with that. And we talked about it after that game. It was like, look, we wanted him to be more aggressive. And with that comes a downside of mistakes. And then now you have to come back and hone in on those mistakes and figure out how to improve.
And what did we see last night?
Exactly. That's what we saw. And with Usman, he has a really quick turnaround from like mistake to improvement.
Sure. You're absolutely right, man. I was just pulling up the stats where you were talking so I could
see exactly.
I wanted to see how many turnovers you had last night.
One
turnover. There we go. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about, man. And it's nice to see. Like, I for one, am really excited about all these players. But one of the guys I'm really excited about talking about is Jared Butler, man. Like, he's really proving he deserves an opportunity to play on this team. He had 18 points, 7 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. Incredibly efficient out there. Just passing the rock around, doing whatever it takes. And he only played in 21 minutes, man. So he almost had a point per minute and an assist, half an assist per minute. So dude is out there playing some serious ball right now. And he's ripping that two-way contract out of so many people's hands right now. And I love it, dude. When you have a player that's willing to do whatever it takes to get some PT in the NBA, those are the two-way players you want.
Absolutely. And one of the guys that is probably going to be a two-way player has been really impressing is Keontae Johnson, right? Mm. We picked him up in the second round, 18 points, you know, but we've seen him put up really good scoring points here in the summer league. His improvement is massive.
I hope we sign him.
We haven't signed him?
I hope we sign him, bro.
You're really saying you haven't?
We have signed him. I'm 100% sure, but I don't think it's a two-way contract.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I need to figure out his contract because someone said two-way contract on Keontae Johnson, and I know that's not the case for Keontae. I don't think, like, to me, like, he's showing too much what I call Kenny Hustle ready. So,
right.
And that's big. And I think if you're able to have...
What's that mean for JRE, who played, by the way, yesterday? I thought he played pretty well considering, you know, it's been a while since we've seen him.
Yeah, listen, for me, I last episode I talked about JRE. To me, he's one of the leaders on the team. So, you know, it's hard for me to move on from JRE. Even though that there is could be a better option than JRE, there's a certain cohesiveness in that locker room that he brings that I don't know if I would want to move on from. Just don't. I'm sorry. I like JRE too much. His mentality and his life, the way that he holds himself, he's accountable to others. He's a true professional. Just a great guy all around. And to me, like, that is more valuable than having, you know, Ty or Garuba on your team. And I know people will say, no, you want talent over mentality and attitude. But sometimes there's moments that you look at a player like JRE with a Villanova background and the championship background and all this other stuff that he's had. And you're like, this young man, right, is something special. And if all he does is that Nick Collison type mentality where he comes in, you know, 7, 10, 12, 14 minutes a game, whatever, you know, and all he does is leads from the bench, then that's the type of player you want taking you into the next generation because he's going to be the guy that's going to take, you know, a $5 million deal the rest of his career just to stay in Oklahoma City. you know? And those are the people that you, those are the people, those are the young players, those are the athletes that you want to surround your organization with. Because if you have three or four of those that are willing to stay within Oklahoma City no matter what, it's teaching what? It's teaching, hey guys, these guys want to stay in Oklahoma City because they want to do whatever it takes because they recognize what Oklahoma City can bring to them. And it creates something passionate for everybody else around. And that's why I keep on going back to it. That's why I get excited about it. And it's a difference, man. It's a difference. You want JRE in the locker room. You want JRE making the calls to the, introduce the guys to Shea and all these other guys when we get drafted in the NBA. You want him doing that because that's the type of people we need in our locker room.
So Jay Will, obviously, to me.
Shane, what's up, man?
What's up, Shane? Jay Will's obviously earned his spot for next year. Like, his level of play is really good. And we talked about Usman Garuba, 40% from three. He shot 75 threes last year. And like you said, he's a better defender than JRE. So, I mean, other than the leadership in the locker room, there is a chance that we could see Garuba stick around, right?
Well, there's a chance that Garuba sticks around regardless. A lot of people are focused on Ty Washington, and you should be right now. But Garuba, in my opinion, is the player that I would choose in this situation. If you could pick one of those two, I'd pick Garuba. And this is the true case about this is that this is not against a JRE or Jay Will or anybody else like that. But, you know, I fully expect Chet not to hit 30 minutes in a game for quite a while. And when he does, it's going to be very limited to 30 minutes, unlimited how many times he hits 30 minutes throughout his season. So with that being said, is I look at that and I say, with that, you know that you are going to have Jay Will as backup and to play alongside Chet. You're going to need JRE. You're going to need Poku. And I've always felt like we needed one more big guy. And Bertans, as much as he can just shoot and stuff like that, he's not that defender that you need in special circumstances. And I look at Garuba and saying, like, to me, like, he's that guy that when we're playing against a bigger frame that needs to be physical, we put him out there, you know? And I keep going back to that, like, where Garuba fits versus some of these other guys. And it's not about a fit versus this player or that player. It's the fact is that having five, what I call big bodies out there, right, is needed. It just is. And we have big bodies that can play defense and that can shoot. And we have right now, we have four without Garuba. So to me, like, it makes sense to keep him, but it doesn't mean that's what Sam Presti or anybody else is thinking. I mean, like, I'm just a dude that's a homer Oklahoma City Thunder podcaster, dude. Like, that's it. Like, I don't even look at the San Antonio Spurs fans with like, or Dallas Maverick fans or anybody else like that with like, oh my gosh, they're knowledgeable about their team. No, because like for us, it's all about Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, like we're not sitting here and we're not trying to grasp across the table and say this or that about this. But I will say when push comes to shove and I see Chet and I see Garuba and I see some of these big guys that we have an opportunity to keep, it makes me excited.
Yeah,
it really does. Because right now, everybody said our weakest position is the big man from last year. And I feel like with Jay Will, the way he's gotten better, Chet adding, and you got Poku, what I feel like has gotten better and thicker. And then you put Garuba in there. And I feel like that is a really good addition this offseason.
Yeah,
it just is.
And like, look, you said it, we're homers, right? We like to hyper-focus on our team and everything else be damned. We look at every single thing that happens around the league and we say, how does it affect the Thunder? And that's really the only angle that we take. If you go back, like last year, we were saying Shea should be an MVP candidate and people were coming out at us like crazy. He was an MVP
candidate.
Remember
when we said that Thunder were going to win 40 games without Chet?
Right, and people... Even
people thought
Thunder
we were delusional.
People, right. They were ready to burn us at the stake because of the sacrilege of the Thunder stuff. So for me, like definitively, this is what we try to do. We try to like look at it and say, hey, like we're homers, but let's extrapolate based on like what we're looking at and say, if we're right, what will this actually come out and look like? We were making a case for J-Dub being Rookie of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
He got second.
We were calling that early.
Well, we were going after it, right? So for us, this is not new. Right, because we see it. We see stuff because we watch every game. We watch 82 games. We watch all the preseason games. We watch all the summer league games. And when you get that acclimated with the team, you're like, well, there's bound to be things that the national media misses about your team. And it's our job as fans, as with a small platform that we have, to highlight those things and draw them to people's attention. And, you know, one of those things that we really like to talk about is what we consider the rookie of the year race that's probably unlike anything that we've ever seen. There's a year where Blake Griffin and John Wall were rookies at the same time, and that was crazy.
Let's just put this out in context, though. In order for this to be a crazy rookie of the year, we have to have two guys that make it to 65 games.
Or
62, whatever it is.
Right, yeah, you're right. I always forget how the new rules affect
That is the context that we're sitting in now. Like, there might be a case where Chet gets injured, Victor gets injured, Brandon Miller gets injured, Scoot gets injured, and they were leading the way, and then they're not going to be able to play in the 65 games. And that might be the situation at that point. So the new rule, like, makes things a little bit more difficult to know what's going to go down. Because we can sit and say, yeah, Victor's going to lead the way all the way through, but he only plays in 60 games because of injury. So thus, he's not eligible for that Rookie of the Year. In past, he would have been and probably would have gotten it.
Or load management. Like, even Spurs fans are very adamant that they would like to see heavy load management for Victor. I mean, heavy load management.
What are you going to play him in 15 minutes a game for 82 games?
Well, look at how they played him he only played two games of summer league. For the second one, it was like they played him for like 90 second spurts. Like, they like run him in there and then pull him out really fast.
I think it's great that the Oklahoma City Thunder have rebuilt their team already, right? And you're going to see a team like San Antonio Spurs who've had a lot of success through the years try to draft a team to be successful against the Thunder. Like, we've laid the way, right? We've laid the foundation of the future of the NBA, and a team like San Antonio Spurs that we've always, in a way, looked up to as being this, you know, big, untouchable, weird friend that we had, right? Now, all of a sudden, we're looking at the new context of the rules and everything that's happening right now, and we're starting to realize what? That we have a legit opportunity to lay the foundation that the rest of the NBA is going to follow for the next 14, 15 years. And if that's the case, then we're going to see a San Antonio Spurs that's going to try to be as good as us. We're going to watch a Dallas Maverick team that will try to be as good as us. We're going to watch, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies try to be as good as us. Like, they're all right now better in I'd say, you know, San Antonio Spurs, but Dallas and, you know, all these other teams you could say in context are better than us according to last year.
Right.
But that to me is going to stop, because I still believe that this team wins 50 games. And I know people are like, you're crazy, because, like, I think one team in the West won 50 games. I think it was 52 by the Denver Nuggets. I'm not 100% sure. I want to go back and look at that.
I think there's a couple, but they definitely didn't make it to 60. I'll say that for sure.
And that's my whole point about this, is that, like, we're saying that there's going to be more 50 win teams this next year than there was this year. And that shouldn't be, like, weird. It shouldn't be abnormal. You look at the San Antonio Spurs is going to be in a tank, right? 100% tank. You look at Houston Rockets. At this point, they look okay, right? But in the long run, if one or two injuries hits them, they're a tank job, right? And Blazers, they're a tank job, okay? Like, we can go down the list. There's going to be five teams in the West that probably aren't even going to try to make it to the playoffs. Right. And if that's the case, there's going to be at least four teams that are going to be 50 win teams in the West. And I'm just betting that we are one of them. And as crazy as people might think I am for that, I don't care. I really don't, because I don't think 10 games more than we won last year is out of reach by adding Chet, a better Shea, a better Dort, a better J-Dub. I don't, you know, better Giddy. I don't think this is an out of reach thing that we're talking about.
Dude, I mean, think, okay, so Nav2K is saying there were 650 wins in all. Bucks have 58.
We're talking about West teams. West, I think there was the Nuggets. Nuggets, maybe the Sun, I don't know.
That's all right, dude. But if you were in a situation where you were William? Like...
Man, I appreciate the support from Perth. Western Australia, man, we love our Australian listeners. They mean the world. They have taught us so much about the AFL. They've taught us so much about the way that the NBL is really changing the NBA. So I just, again, William, I appreciate you stepping in here and saying what's up.
So if you were like advising the Spurs or say the Mavericks or the Rockets or some team, maybe not just from Texas, but some other team that wanted to find a way to like rebuild the Sam Presti way, right? Obviously the Spurs have a bit of a head start with Victor. So they've got one player, but how would you recommend going about it? Like there is a sense of like, oh, well, get as many high draft picks as you can, but there's different ways to go about that because you look at Giddey, he was picked at number 6. You look at Shea, we brought him in. Dort was undrafted. Really, J-Dub was picked at number 12. Usman Jang was picked at 11. We had the 12th pick and we moved up to number 10 to get Cason Wallace. Like, how would you really rebuild if you're trying to copy the Thunder? Is it something
simple? Two shit years. You got to commit to two shit years. They just had one. They need one more. All right.
Okay. But what do you do in those 2 years?
You've got to get a top six pick, man.
Okay.
You got to get a top six pick.
But what makes the Thunder different is the storehouse of draft picks they have.
No, not just that. Okay. Let's just talk about the rebuild beginning. Okay. We had Shea at the beginning of our rebuild.
Right.
I mean, that's period. I mean, like, what are they starting to rebuild with Victor right now? They're starting their rebuild. No. Like, if they're starting the rebuild with not a all-star type player already, then it's already like they're behind. And you can say anything you want. Like, catching up to the Oklahoma City Thunder isn't necessarily something that's going to be plausible for the Spurs. What's going to be plausible for the Spurs is after the Oklahoma City Thunder are done with this run, whether that's 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, that's the time that they'll be able to capitalize on their next run.
Okay.
But that's going to be during Victor's peak time. Like, the Thunder are peaking it to that peak time of their time. And that's going to be over the next 5 years that you're going to see the Thunder peak. You know, and the Spurs can say, oh yeah, that's going to be the same timeline as us. It's not. I mean, the Dallas can say it's going to be the same timeline as us. We got Luka. It's not. You can say, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies timeline. Yeah. In theory, sure, the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, in theory, right? But again, you've got to keep your players together. You got to keep the dysfunction out of the locker room. There's so many things and aspects that come into being able to keep a team together like that. And I just don't know if there's enough teams that have done it right, that have drafted right, that have put the right leadership in, that have put the right coaching staffs in, the player developmental staffs. I don't know if another team has done it the way the Oklahoma City Thunder team has. And that's why I keep on going back to this and saying the Oklahoma City Thunder are the team of the future. And anybody that doesn't believe that, I don't care. Like, I just don't care, because the reality of the situation we're in is that you can't have a good team without 15 players on your team anymore. Like, the team that we used to see where they would play six guys in the playoffs, six guys and you know what, first series, second series, Western Conference playoffs, Western Conference, and then the finals. You know, four series, they play six guys in those games. Those days are over.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're going to see a team that's going to be refreshed, that's going to have players coming in, that's going to be causing issues. I mean, 15 players, 18 players really, but 15 players, we got like 75 different matchups. Between those 75 different matchups and coaching staffs that we have and the understanding of how to play these players, we've got so many different matchups that will cause issues for these guys that we can throw in. Hey, look at Ken, he's having trouble against Kenny Hustle. Well, guess what? We're going to throw Keontae Johnson against him, right? We're going to throw Dort against him. We can keep throwing these type of athletes against every single one of these players that are really dominant players. And it's just great, man. Like, we built properly and it's beautiful. What's up, Salty?
What's up, Salty? So I love what he's saying right now, that our rebuild came with big time development. And that's a good point. That's not something we had mentioned, which is like, you just don't bring these players in and expect them to be there. You bring in Chip. You bring in Mark Degnault. You bring in the new assistant coaches we have, and you focus in on player development from your organization all the way down. I also dig what Phantom is saying, which is the Jazz are the closest thing to Oklahoma City young core. They have a young core, and then they also have a stockpile of picks to back that up so they can reinforce it. Those things have to go hand in hand. If they don't happen at the same time, like if you just end up with the young players and you don't have the storehouse of picks, then you're going to be running on fumes by the time you get to the conference finals.
100%, man. 100%. I like what 9-5 says. Chet, 19 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Thunder win 51 games versus Victor, 25, 10, and 4. Spurs win 32 games.
I'm screenshotting that because I think it's beautiful.
I think it's great. And I think what you're saying is right on, because if Chet, I think that's, to me, Chet is going to average 14 to 18 points a game. So you're saying above that. I think he's above 8 rebounds, but I think that's safe saying 8. 4 assists is right on the money. I want to throw in there, why not throw 3 or 5 blocks in their game? That would be something that's beautiful. But Victor, I mean, 25, 10, and 4, Spurs 32 wins. How many games has Victor played? 9-5? You think he plays 50 games up or above or under 50?
Yeah, I love this idea of 51 wins. You know, like, definitely something that I'm interested in is what that would look like.
9-5
for the Thunder, yes. 51 wins. Like that would represent to me
BDE.
A full circle situation where we've reached back to we're a powerhouse heading into the playoffs. We're really, really young. And we have all the assets we need to keep pushing it. So I just have the sense that like we're about to see the second generation of the Thunder really come into their own, and it starts this year. And there's a little downtime, and we learned last year bad things can happen in the downtime. But if everything stays on track, this is going to be a situation where we're going to be really impressed. I'm going to say it now. All right. J-Dub is making a case for All-Star.
Dang. I love it, dude. I love it. He's got a long way to go to get to the All-Star, but I will say this. I fully have every idea that J-Dub will be involved heavily in the All-Star game this year, whether it's being a participant in the All-Star game, the dunk contest. Also, he's definitely going to be rising stars, no doubt about that. So in my opinion, he's going to be heavily represented in the All-Star break. So for me, that's a win for him. But man, if he got it to All-Star his second year, that's dangerous, man. And that means he's averaging 20 something points a game.
Well, he's, you're the one who said you thought he'd be up to 22, 23.
Yeah, I do. But I'm just saying but All-Star for me, like that means that he is absolutely dominating.
Last year, he led the league in dunks for guards. Yes. I'm just saying, if you want to have an All-Star game, you kind of want the most exciting dunkers in it, as well as if he's averaging over 20. Like,
sure.
Like you wouldn't want him if he was averaging 15.
But if he's averaging 23, that's the problem. Like you want to ask most of the NBA fan base if they know who Jalen Williams is, and they'll say which one. You know, like, and you're like, J-Dub, which one was that? You know, like most of them still can't understand who J-Dub is because we have two Jalen Williamses. And to me, the only reason that's the situation that we're in is because he needs to get his name out. I think this is the year that he puts his name out. I think going as a rising star, going as a dunk contest participant, I think will put him on the map to that next year, year three, as him being an All-Star. I really do. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, J-Dub as a year three All-Star, but guys, when I say J-Dub's different, I mean, like, I truly mean it. Like, I've seen and I have scouted out hundreds of players. And to me, the one player that consistently stands out in all my scouting years has been J-Dub. Like, I just remember the first time Mark showed me video of J-Dub and just sitting back and being like, how do we get this guy? How is this guy going to be available to us? Because there's no way we're the only ones seeing how good this player is. You know, like, and I just remember being like, how are we going to talk about him without gushing about love about J-Dub? And you're like, well, just let it go, man. We got to let people know what we feel about him. And I still think about that a lot, because when you see players that like resemble that exact thing that you want, and we can say Josh Giddey, we can talk Chet. Like, we saw all these players being drafted by Oklahoma City You know, we talked about Kaysen. You know, I wanted Kaysen to be drafted the moment I started looking into him. Like, we pick these players because it's not just about hoop skills. It's about desire to play. It's about the heart. It's about the passion. It's about all this other stuff that they have that you start seeing that it takes to be in the NBA. And if a player doesn't have X amount of mental toughness, they don't have what it takes. If a player doesn't have X amount of whatever you want to say, he's not going to make the NBA. It's just not. And we all have to start recognizing who those players are, because the NBA is changing so dramatically and drastically that you're going to see these players that are drafted, right, in the top 15 that are going to be out of the NBA in the next 3 years, or so far on a bench that you're not even seeing them. And you're like, how did that happen? How did J-Dub go there? How did Kaysen go there? How did Usman Jang go there? This is crazy. How did Jay Will end up in the second round? I mean, that's the beauty of what we're watching, guys.
Yeah, dude. Phantom, I'm a big fan of Keontae George. Agbaji, I think how you say it. I've seen him play a little bit, but I'm really, I can't pretend like I know his game that well. But I do agree that the Jazz are looking really good. And I dig what you're saying about Lu Dort. If we keep him, like, we're going to have an edge in the playoffs. And if not, like, we're going to have to learn a lot about this team. And it could be potentially, you say catastrophic, I say more devastating. But either way, it could be really disappointing if we get into the playoffs and we find out we needed Lu Dort if we let him go. I'm digging what you're saying for sure. I like 9-5. Chet plays 70 games for load management with 28 minutes per game. I think this is all realistic. Like, you're obviously on hitting the nail on the head with this one. And because of our depth, Jay will be taking a leap. Ooze will be coming more consistent. We already talked about J-Dub. This is the best part about player development and going young, right?
That's it. I mean, when in doubt, like, Sam did it right, man. It is when in doubt, you just draft young and hope that the talented players that you're drafting come out. But if you look at, I look at the Poku draft, all right? The Poku pick, right? After that, everything else that Sam has done. And I still think the Poku pick is a masterful pick, but I use the Poku pick after the Poku pick is because of who we've gotten after the Poku pick. You know, it's not a diss on Poku. It's about who we got after Poku. Poku was the beginning. And to me, like, I look at this and I start understanding, like, no matter what happens, this team, right? This team started with Shea. All right. We had two crap years. Last year was a fun year. And this year is going to be an incredibly exciting year because nobody but us understand how good, when I say us, it's our fans, it's you guys around the world. Nobody understands how good this team is. Except for us, because we've been sitting here watching, you know, anticipating every single move. And now this team is deeper and better than I could have ever imagined at year two of us trying. Way better than I could have ever imagined. And now it's just like, now we're going to sit back and we're going to enjoy some really good hoops. We're going to smash some fucking heads in. And we're going to look at this and it's all said and done. And we're going to say this was one of the most improved teams ever in 2 years. Just as simple as that. Like, the Oklahoma City Thunder are leading the way in how to have an organization for the future. They've laid the path. Now, all we have to do is just watch it and observe it and enjoy it, because there's nothing else we can do.
Artificial intelligence will be copying Sam Presti soon enough. Rebuild your team. All right, do it the Sam Presti way, guys.
All right, man.
Lu Dort was there, too. You said Shea started the team. Lu Dort was there every bit of that with Shea.
Absolutely.
I love the Canadian core. I love what we're doing here, bro. I'm pumped up about the future, just like everybody else is. And, like, just buckle up. So what do we know about the upcoming game? I know we need to get out of here, but the next game, when is that?
Tomorrow?
All right, yeah, guys.
Yeah, let me go ahead and pull that up. Well, you go ahead and read our members, man. We appreciate you guys.
Oh, for sure, bro. For sure. Let me pull this up real quick.
All the games, that would be tomorrow, Friday. We play at 4:30 Eastern, so 3:30 Central. Early game. Hell yeah.
All right, man. I'm tripping here right now. My bad, everybody. Here we go. We got Ryan Sheffield, Too Cool, Column, Ben Mack, Alsombra, Golden Soldier, Unk, Bluegill, Wayne, Cameron, Smitsta, K Bizzle, and Blake. And we got a new guy. Blake. We got two Blakes. So we got Blake squared, bro.
Dude, no. We got Blake. He's my biscuit. That's all you guys need to know. He's the biscuit.
And of course, Niner by Nature, we love you too. Everybody who takes the time to support us, Mark Howitz, this is all for you guys. Like, this is for us, it's an ability for us to jump on, enjoy hanging out with you guys, talk about our favorite team, kind of predict the future, see what happens. It gets us pumped up, man.
Before we go, I got to address this. Mawani, bro, I really enjoyed the fact that he thinks we're idiots. I just want to let you guys know that because I will double down on that every single time. The fact is that this dude let us talk on his podcast for 40 minutes. He gave us the mic for 40 minutes. Like, the joke's on him, man. I don't even need to say anything else except the joke's on him. He gave us the mic for 40 minutes, and that was 12,000 fans of his. What is he thinking?
And I enjoyed it so much, I had my kids listen to it, because honestly, if he was saying something that was really honestly embarrassing, I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, watch that. But he really had trouble articulating a point. He just would stop and be like,
stop and just, I can't say anything. Like, I don't know what to say about this.
I know. Like, we mentioned Sam Presti and like the way he's rebuilt the coaching core and stuff. And all he did was like, don't talk to me about Sam Presti. Don't talk. He's zero championships. Like, he couldn't get past that. So it's just like.
But we do have a coach that has 5 championships on our team or more.
Chip.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, San Antonio, for Chip. We appreciate you guys.
Man.
We'll see you guys tomorrow for the game.
Exactly, Mawani. Exactly.